Welcome to Thirst for Knowledge, a Magic the Gathering podcast. This is episode number 4. Today we'll be talking about our reactions to Magic 2012, the Tribes in Innistrad, and speculating on Dark Ascension. Hey, welcome to Thirst for Knowledge. My name is Chris, and I run mtgfan.tumblr.com.
I'm Zach. I run ihititwithmyaxe.tumblr.com.
I'm Christina. I run vidalcongirl.tumblr.com.
And I'm Michael. I run portapod.tumblr.com. And this podcast is now available in Technicolor.
Oh, really? Okay. So let's talk about some of our reactions from the recent M12 release. What do you guys think? Do you think it's better than Magic 2011? Yes, no?
I like M11 better, to be honest. I really enjoyed M11. And aside from the fact that I did piss poor in the pre-release for M12, as a set, M11 was just more exciting to me, and I can't really explain why.
I think I preferred M12. Just there were some really fun, interesting things that made me happy. M11 was one of those ones where I was like, oh, okay, well, this just happened. Whatever. And I kind of didn't really care too much at the pre-release.
I never played in M11, so I don't really know much about it. But I know that before M12 came out, a lot of people were concerned about Bloodthirst in M12. And I've actually been pretty excited. Like I was really excited to use it anyways. And I'm really pleased with M12 as a set. Like, I was already getting sick of Scars, so it was nice to have something else to draft with that seems to work really well together. So you know, I'm super pumped.
That's actually, you mentioned something, and I realized that's what it is I like Scry a lot better than Bloodthirst. I like Lightning Bolt a lot better than Shock and Incinerate. I'm kind of almost a purist. You know, I like Liliana better than I like Sorin, so I'm real excited for her appearance in the fall set. Overall, like I liked the spells in M11 better than I liked them in M12. M12's got good stuff, and we'll talk about it in a moment, but like, I flipped my crap when I saw Voltaic Key get reprinted. Like, that's the most exciting reprint I've ever seen in a long time. And, well, I just, the spells in M12 don't do it for me.
You see, I liked, you know, touching on the Bloodthirst aspect, I wasn't excited at first. I wasn't excited for Bloodthirst in M12. I'm just like, you know, whatever. And then I just saw, like, the Mythic Rare Dragon pop next to me with all of its counters. I'm like, oh, okay, that's kind of awesome. And then I actually, you know, when you get that Island Walk Crocodile that gets Bloodthirst, just swinging in with a bluff of, you know, Llanowar Elf, and getting that Crocodile in for its Bloodthirst, that makes it really awesome against the Island deck. I do miss Scry. I do think I would have been more excited with more Scry stuff in every color, or well, mostly blue. Yes, mostly blue. But I think it is satisfactory as a core set.
Honestly, the Bloodthirst, a lot of people were talking about how it teaches players or newer players to put their creatures out after they attack, which is something I really needed to learn because I put all of my creatures out before I attack all the time. And it's actually made me think about it, and I have been putting out my creatures later. And it's been beneficial, to tell you the truth. And I think the lesson it teaches newer players is worth the fact that it might not be the most exciting mechanic in the world. I know Scry is pretty awesome, but I think Bloodthirst teaching newer players, like, you know, to put their creatures out later is important.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because
regardless of the mechanical benefits of Bloodthirst, that's a good idea because it means you go through combat knowing a lot more than your opponent does than that would work if you played stuff pre-combat main phase.
There's always room for combat tricks when you just go from main phase to combat straight away.
Yeah, I mean, it's good playing to put your stuff out later most of the time so that you can look like you have combat tricks to play. So, I mean, I think that is important enough for it to be the, like, core mechanic of M12.
So let's move right along to our favorites from M12. So let's go ahead and start with Zach and just go in the introduction order.
All right. Well, my top five for M12, and this was a very hard call for all of us, narrowing it down to five, I'm sure. Coming in at my fifth, the little three-piece cycle, the Crown, Throne, and Scepter of Empires. I was a big fan of these. I thought mechanically it was a great way to represent the flavor of collecting these pieces of power, spreading an idea across three cards like this. And it makes for great limited fun. Each of them are powerful on their own and limited. And what is it? There's like a 1 out of like 95 chance or something that you get all three in a sealed pool. And for the occasional person who does, good for them. Good luck trying to beat somebody who has access to all three of them at once. They are just crazy good together. Coming in at four is a reprint that I was very excited about. And that's Grim Lavamancer. I'm a red mage. Grim Lavamancer is a key piece in one of the decks I learned to play on back from Judgment Onslaught era. So I was very psyched to see Grim Lavamancer coming back. Coming in at three for me, also a reprint, though a much more recent one, is Smallpox. I'm so excited for this card because it helps Mono Black be a deck. And if you're playing Mono Swamps, filling your deck with a little extra land, maybe some tech edges, and dropping smallpox here and there, great way to disrupt your opponent's mana tempo. And flowing into my second, my number two spot here, speaking of mana tempo, what a powerhouse, Solemn Simulacrum. Fantastic card, works great with the artifacts in the meta. It does everything you want it to. It rewards you for playing him. It rewards you for him dying. This card is fantastic, and I can't play enough of him. And for me, coming in at number one, I love the new Chandra. Chandra the Firebrand, absolutely fantastic card. Very splashable, very castable. Has a ton of implications and utility in the metagame right now. I've been having a blast playing Planeswalker decks using her copy ability to copy Tezzeret's Gambit. With I could list a ton of great plays with her, and I'll spare you. She is fantastic, and she is good in all sorts of decks, and I love this card so much. And my honorable mention is Ring Flesh for the flavor text. The flavor text on this card is probably my favorite flavor text in the entire set. It's "Don't blame me, you're the one walking around with skin." it's a pretty sweet flavor text quote right there. But that's my five.
Okay. Christina.
Okay. Sure. My top five is from a limited standpoint because that's really all I play, that and like EDH. So in no particular order, I have Timely Reinforcements. I've dropped that in limited a couple of times already, like turn two after somebody's got, a couple of creatures out. They've already taken out a couple of my life, and automatically I'm, up at over 20, and I have three soldiers on the board. Like, for three mana, one white, that's, or not turn two, obviously, turn three if I'm playing it. But it's just, you start out being at a little bit of a disadvantage, and then all of a sudden you're at an advantage again, or at least you're on a level playing field at some other number, which must be two, I guess. I have Pacifism. Pacifism doesn't really need a lot of explanation in limited. It's a two cost to shut something down, really. There's not a lot of things that Pacifism can't shut down, but I have talked at great length with a few people about, Pacifism, Ice Cage, and Arcanus Will. Somebody want to tell me what the proper way of saying that card is? Arcanus?
Arachnus
Web? Wow. Can't say that word. Arachnus Web. So, yeah, I mean, I still think pacifism of the three of those is the best one. I don't actually really like Arachnus Love that much, but I have dealt with it more than enough times to know that it's a very real threat. I had Ice Cage on my top 10, but then I had to narrow it down to 5, so now it's not on here anymore. But next I have Phantasmal Bear, a 2-cost or a 1-cost 2/2, just beat down. You know, like turn 1 you can get 1 out, turn 2 you can get 2 out. Like I had somebody beat me down with Phantasmal Bears. It just numbers and numbers of Phantasmal Bears. It was really actually traumatizing. And now I will never underestimate that card because it is a really, really good limited pick. If you can get enough Phantasmal Bears, like I know I was kind of unimpressed with the fact that illusions, as soon as you target them with any sort of ability or anything, they're dead. But it's still a 1-cost 2/2 that, you know, first turn, chances are I'm not going to be able to do anything about because I'm trying to get stuff on the board myself. My next pick was, of course, Sarah Angel, because it's me. And I don't know if there's really much to say about Sarah Angel other than the fact that, like, I loved that card before M12, and I'm going to continue loving it. I actually thought that Sarah Angel was a pretty vanilla card before M12 really came out and I got a chance to use it in Limited. Because, you know, it's a 5-cost Flying Vigilance, 4/4. It's, in terms of Angels, it's not actually the most interesting one, but in terms of Limited, turn 5, if you drop that, that's a bomb. Like, that's a very serious bomb, and I pick that pretty frequently, you know, second pick if I can, or first pick if there's, like, a Goblin Chieftain in my pack. My last one is Royal Assassin. Like, I have yet to see a deck with Royal Assassin not go really far in draft. It's so easy to use that in a deck, especially if you draft the Crown of Empires. You can tap stuff yourself and then kill it. Or you can be a threat to somebody who says, well, I'm going to attack you this turn with something that doesn't have vigilance. And then all of a sudden, it's up to die, you know, as soon as they tap it. So even without Crown of Empires or Gideon's Lawkeeper, Royal Assassin poses a big threat, even though it's just a 1/1 for 3. So that's my top 5 of M12.
So, let's see. My top 5, it's from a casual limited standpoint. Coming at number 5, Scrambleverse. Now, there's a little story to go along with Scrambleverse so far. The moment I saw the card, I said, oh, man, I'm going to put that in my mono-red EDH deck. It's going to be hilarious. And you know what? It is. I played it last night. I went Scrambleverse, which automatically made 2 people scoop. Nobody wants to deal with it. So it is just – it's funny. No, it's not the most impressive card in the world. It costs 8, and you only switch non-land permanents. If it was all permanents, it'd be even better. But it's only non-land, so – yeah, but it's funny, and it's a good time, and it's exactly what you want to do in some situations where you run out of steam on turn 10 and they're just building up. You say, yeah, well, I'm going to Scrambleverse, and then everyone goes, oh, and gets really upset and scoops. And that takes away a bunch of opponents, and then I get to, you know, burn someone down. I actually managed to get the next guy to scoop. It was a 4-person game. I Scrambleverse, and I Jocko Hops right afterwards because I didn't get what I wanted. So, with a Ward of Bones out, I floated enough mana to get a Ward of Bones.
So, oh, wow.
Damn.
Yeah, he scooped. He's like, nah, I'm done. So I won. Now my mono red deck is now winning. Go me. Coming number 4, Turn to Frog. I really don't know if I have to explain it. I hope I don't. It's just funny. I mean, come on. Turn to Frog. Oh, well, it's a frog now. Great. Okay. Coming at number 3, Adaptive Automaton. Tribal's always cool. I need, like, 50 of these guys so I can give, like, 30 to one friend and then keep 20 for myself because it's just good. It's going to help out a lot for all you people who didn't get Lords, which is, unfortunately, a whole bunch of guys. And I'm going to make a Hummer a deck, and I'm going to have 4 of those guys in there, and it's going to be awesome.
Oh, God.
All right. Going at number 2, Quicksilver Amulet. I explained before. I was really happy about this. I'm a Quicksilver Amulet hipster. I knew about it before it was cool, but that's okay. I'm glad it came out. I'm glad people get to see it now. Everybody loves it. Great art. Amazing art. And it's just a great card in general. And my number one pick, which I know a lot of people are going to say out there, oh, you stupid nerds, and I hate us so much, Chandra the Firebrand. I really like her. I got her when I played her in Limited. It was so funny. I managed to lock down the board. I was sitting on a crown, a satchel, and a Chandra. And ooh, I just wow. sat on that.
Holy cow.
And they were just like, huh, well, my life kind of sucks, doesn't it? And I'm like, yup, sorry. I pulled her out in EDH. I finally managed to do it. I got Chandra, then Jocko Hops, and I just got to sit there and wail on people. I mean, it was one damage, but it was still nice.
Ooh,
and everybody was just like, yeah, everybody felt pretty bad about it. She is a great card. She costs 4, which just improved her so much. So much. And she can copy the moment she comes out, and I can do some stupid fork things, you know. It's just, it's great. It's great, and I do love her very much. And I would totally love her sexually, because she's just so hot.
I'm sure Ask Chandra will take that. Ask Chandra and Ask Jace will have a word with you.
Mine's good.
And my honorable mention would be the 3-piece set that we had said before that Zach mentioned. I actually really like them, and I totally want to build a deck around them. I'm not sure what kind of deck it's going to be yet. I'm trying to figure it out. Maybe some sort of casual deck where I run what's his name? Urza's brother.
Oh,
Mishra?
Mishra.
Yeah, or I run Mishra maybe, or you know, maybe I'll throw in some Tinkers or something. You know, just try to run something really interesting. But I am really looking forward to trying to use those sometimes. They're just – it's a great concept. I miss things like that. You know, that type of legendary stuff, you know, a set of things, put them together, something cool happens. You know, I like that mechanic. I've always liked that mechanic. So those are my top 5.
All right. My top 5, let's see. We'll start with Turn to Frog. I love that card too. It's awesome. It's flavorful. It's got Ribbit. Why not? Top 4, I like that the cycle of tap lands are coming back. You know, the dual tap lands. That's fun. That's fine. And, you know, it totally works. Would have expected actually enemy lands, but, you know, I suppose with Innistrad coming up with their tribals, which we'll talk about later, it kind of needed these. So, all the tap lands are much, much cheaper now, and I can actually afford to, you know, go out and buy sets. You know.
Yay. Cheap.
Cheap stuff. Again, in number 3 spot, we have the Cycle of Titans returning. For the longest time, I actually only thought, like, only 2 of the Titans would be coming back. And I think that was discussed upon by Wizards as well, where they were only working with 2 Titans or so.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Don't hold me to it, but they were going to go with the blue one and the white one. I'd have to look it back up, but... I'm really happy that the Titans are coming back. It also makes them cheaper, and it also helps that in my sealed pool I got a Grave Titan, and during one of my games it actually died while swinging with its 2 zombie buddies, and then I actually had enough mana to go, okay, I'm gonna what's that damn card that costs 1 mana and brings it back? I'm gonna disentomb and then I'm gonna recast him. So I got
somebody did it to me. Somebody did that to me after I got rid of a Grave Titan, and I was so mad. I dealt with him once and it took a lot of resources, and he freaking recast it the very next turn.
I didn't even wait a turn. I was just like, all right, second main phase, he's back. And my friend just scooped. She was like, oh, okay, I'm done. I'm dead. Okay, so the Cycle of Titans. And then we have Visions of Beyond. I also think this might be a sleeper rare. Especially concerning the next block of Innistrad, because it's the rumor going around, it's pretty much almost confirmed, is that it's going to be graveyard based. So if I can mill somebody out, a few cards, I can just basically ancestral on their turn. And the way Magic works is if somebody's ancestraling, they're winning. They're winning, or they're searching, or they've just got their win condition. At my number 1 spot, I have here Garruk Primal Hunter. It's just really, really good. It shows that Garruk has gotten stronger as a planeswalker, because what used to be a minus ability is now a, you know, a plus three plus, you know, is a plus ability. And the second ability where you can just draw cards equal to greatest power among creatures you control, that's fun too. And his ultimate just blows everybody out, where it's just like, put a bunch of 6/6 out. And it's, you know, I think it's a really fun card. You know, it might see some play. I am not sure. But at triple green, it's a big commitment.
Oh,
so
Garrett's Primal Hunter will definitely be seeing heavy constructed play.
Yeah. So do you guys think that M12 will really impact Standard? Why or why not?
Are we starting with me again?
Okay, yeah, well, yeah, we always start with you.
Yeah, we'll go
sure.
with
Sure. Yes, in some ways. I mean, you're still going to see the Titans around. I don't know that it's going to impact Standard before rotation a whole lot. You know, the Top Decks article posted shortly before this podcast was recorded talked about how Callblade is still a deck and still a really good deck, which is frustrating, but, like, it's now beatable, obviously. It's not nearly as strong. Preordain is still really good. I don't think Ponder is going to replace Preordain. I like Preordain much better than Ponder. But if you look at the 2011 France National Championships, you got Callblade being the winner, and another deck, you got Red Deck Wins, is now much better. So I think in that respect, M12 is impacting Standard pretty significantly with Red. I mean, Red got fantastic tools. Elves made the list. Bant Birthing Pod. Like, Birthing Pod's really, really good. And Blue-White Control and Vampires. I don't know that Vampires are running cards that they didn't have access to, any of the new Vampires. I don't think the new Vampires are good enough for that deck. You know, you got Rug Twin is a really, really cool deck. And I don't know that deck has a whole lot it gets access to now that M12's around. Tempered Steel doesn't really get any new tricks. And that's a pretty strong deck. You know, you have some stuff, but I don't think M12 gave a whole lot to Standard that we'll see make a huge difference yet, except for Red Tech, actually. I'll say the Red decks are now, you know, whether it's Red Deck Wins or Goblins or what have you, I think Red got the most stuff that is immediately meaningful. And I'll finish this by saying that I think Pyromancer's Ascension might be a deck again. It won't be the format warping monstrosity that Jacob Van Loonen created, but
I love,
you know,
that
back
deck.
when you could take infinite turns on, like, ridiculous consistency. But I think that, you know, I played against, and I've been playing around with some lists where you can run things like a ton of fetches and Jataxian Probe and dump cards into your graveyard real quickly. And, you know, as unfair as Ancestral Recall and Standard feels, getting a free copy of it, that just blows,
yeah.
Man. That's really good.
Like, so, I'm currently, like, holding on to my my, like, three copies of Pyromancer's Ascension with glee. I'm like, oh, come on, please be a deck. And I'm trying to break it. I'm trying to, like, I'm going up with, like, red and blue decks. And I'm just like, I want to make this work. Let's make this work. And just get the probes in there and preordains and the ponders, everything.
Yeah, you know, with preordain, ponder, Jataxian Probe, lightning bolt, burst lightning, you know, the new visions or whatever it is. And, you know, you got Mana Leak is still in Standard. That's the thing. I don't know if M12 changed the game up as much as it helped keep the game intact. We're going to see there are major players in the best decks right now that M12 kept around. You know, we're going to see more Gideon. We're going to see, you know, more blue-white control because we still have Mana Leak. And, you know, we're going to see were apparently were, you know, they didn't print Squadron Hawk again, thank goodness. But you know, the Titans are back. You're going to see more Titan-based strategies. You know, you won't have Valakut, so like that combo won't be around. You know, maybe Quicksilver Amulet is enough to put Eldrazi Green back. You know, good enough to start taking, you know, top eights again. Standard's very interesting right now. What I like about Standard now, it's the biggest that Standard ever gets, you know, unless they start printing ridiculous sized sets again. But this is the point where you have 3 months to go nuts. You have the most options. You have a balanced format, I think. You know, yes, the Star City, whatever it was, had like four of the top eight were Squadron Hawks or were Cobblade. But there's a lot of other stuff. You got a lot of options, and even within those options, there's a lot of different ways you can go, and different takes on different decks. So, I really like what's going on in Standard right now. I don't know how much of that is shaken up by M12 as much as M12 just keeps certain mainstays around for a year longer.
So yeah, I'm basically in agreement because. I think M12 didn't, like, completely open the door for other decks. It basically gave more tools for the decks that are current right now to use.
Well, core sets are notorious for not being quite as powerful as expansions because they don't have as much synergy. Obviously, you know, if a particular mechanic is good, you know, a block with that mechanic versus a core set with that mechanic is going to be a discrepancy in power. You know, if Bloodthirst is good in M12, that's all, you know, nice. But if Bloodthirst is good across a three set block, you get a lot more Bloodthirst tech. You got a lot more tools with which to build a deck around. You know, I like what's going on in Standard. I got my ass handed to me the other night by. Three color by like what it was Bant allies. Like allies are around again. You know, Callblade being not the deck anymore, the field is wide open. You got as much as you're gonna get. And I think the sets in Standard right now are pretty good. Zendikar blocks obviously a very strong block. Scars has a lot of synergy. And M11 and M12 are both very good sets and I think give you the bread and butter to go nuts. So get to your local card shops in the next 3 months, brew up your rogue decks because everybody else is doing it, and who knows? You know, you might stumble across some fantastic synergy or hybrid or whatever. It's a really great time to be playing Standard right now.
Yeah, I'm really going to enjoy it. So let's see here. So we've got Innistrad. Innistrad's going to be coming out, and we've had hints of the tribes that are going to be in it. Blue-white is getting ghosts, blue-black has zombies, red-green has vampires and werewolves, green has, you know, just werewolves. And something that Mark Rosewater is keeping from us is the green and white tribe. So what do you guys think that's going to be?
Somebody mentioned that it might be gargoyles earlier, and the more I think about it, the more that kind of makes sense to me. I don't know about the green part with gargoyles. I don't know. It seems like it would be a really neat creature to have. I don't know if there are, like, if gargoyles already exist in Magic, do they?
Yeah, they do.
There are some.
All right, and... well, that'd be a cool one to have. I don't know if there's any gargoyles with green in them or if they're all, like, artifacts or white or
there
something.
There are currently 19 individual gargoyles. Most of them are artifacts or white. There are some red gargoyles. Some blue-white gargoyles. But that's about it. Gargoyles are pretty solidly artifacts and white at current.
What I said about gargoyles, I actually reblogged this, is the problem I would see having green-white be gargoyles is, number one, flying. You know, that's more white thing, but not so much green. Number two, gargoyles are mostly artifacts, as stated earlier. So I'm just like, I don't know if it's going to be gargoyles.
Somebody else mentioned slime too, whatever, or something.
Slimes?
Slimes, I don't think slimes fit the flavor of the new world. Don't get me wrong, like, acidic slime is one of my favorite new cards in the last 3 years. Like, my favorite card from M10. But slime doesn't fit in this kind of flavor.
I think it's something creepy that's green white.
I think somebody mentioned fungi.
Oh, maybe that's what I was thinking of.
Maybe.
Got some creepy fungi up in here.
I mean, like, you can get, I mean, there's aspects of, you know, green absolutely would take fungi. White would be like, all right, how would we, you know, how would we make them as a group more awesome? Because white's usually about, you know, the little guys who become more awesome as you get more of them.
Yeah.
That's my rationale behind it.
When
the
you
only
think
white
about
fungus is Paladin, like, from Planar Chaos.
Okay.
There are a lot of fungi at the present. Some of them are black. Most of them are green. There are about 30 of them. They're all right. You know, Molchamp was a fungus. He's pretty good.
What kind of creatures are green white already? Like, do y'all think it's going to be a creature that's already been printed before? Is it going to be a new one, maybe?
Well,
I don't know.
I think the way to look at this is what's on this list right now. We got vampires. We got werewolves. We got zombies. You know, what else goes along with that? We got ghosts. You know, ghosts, zombies, vampires, werewolves. What, I mean, like, ninjas? Pirates, zombies, robots? Like, what do we got here? Are we building, like, an NBZR? Like, what is...
I mean, we could have...
What is missing from the list?
We could technically have hunters of these beasts in the green-white category.
See, but that's... I agree, and I think there will be creatures and characters in the setting in Innistrad that are going to hunt these various things. But hunter is, I mean, that's one of the second parts of a creature type. You got race and then profession. They're going to have a racial tribe that is you know, green white, and I think when we finally figure out what it is, we're going to be kicking ourselves that we didn't think of it sooner.
I don't know. I could kind of see it as being birds or kithkins or something like that. Because, I mean, birds, I think of bops. You know, those are green and those are white.
Birds.
And that, you know, that kind of goes with both. And you know, when you think of white, you think of someone in a top hat with a monocle. At least I do. you know, and then you think of green, you think of something wild. So we got a bunch of storks and monocles and top hats, and that's not completely unreasonable.
Yeah, but if you put birds on a list of ghosts, zombies, vampires, werewolves, and birds, birds is clearly not, like, doesn't belong on that list. There's going to be something that belongs on this list. You know, it's not like skeletons or I don't know.
We're playing that game. One of these things is not like the other. I'll try to be a little more careful. How about kithkins? Huh? I like kithkins.
I think flavor-wise, kithkins don't belong on that list either.
Like, I don't know.
This is a gothic themed set. We need.
That's just it. When I think of kithkins, I think of halflings. So you know, I'm thinking of Victorian London. I'm just imagining a bunch of kithkins walking around dressed up like that, having to
top hats.
Vampires and werewolves. You know, I mean, who do you root for when you like see a horror movie? You're gonna root for the weakest one. So people are going to look at kithkins and they're going to see, like, you know, a bunch of halflings. They're like, oh, man, you know, what are they going to do? They have to defend themselves against all these monsters. Mm. And so I can see that.
I mean, like, I think green-white is totally going to be, like, the hero or the underdog of this series because, you know, the first set always lays out the ground. This is the world. These are the things in it. This is the conflict that's going to happen in the next set. You know, so I'm absolutely, well... I'm pretty darn sure that Green White is going to be some kind of hero or underdog type of thing.
That would be really interesting because I think most people are trying to guess like some sort of like creepy creature and like looking through on Gather at some of the things that are Green White already. It seems like a lot of them are like human knights or elf knights or something. The only ones that look like remotely creepy are the fungus and then like there's the spiders.
Funguses and top hats maybe?
Oh, spiders. Spiders makes sense.
Yeah,
I forgot about that.
Damn it.
But I'm so sick of spiders already.
Well, we did just get a spider lord, so
exactly.
that is
So
definitely
that
a
makes
possibility.
sense too. Like, if they're gonna do spiders, they've already sort of set it up a little bit in M12. So
Fuck you, giant spider.
Giant spider.
Yeah, I mean, they're gonna make you bitter about giant spider until you're in Innistrad, and there's gonna be like crazy awesome spiders or something.
You know what? I believe spiders a lot sooner than I believe Kithkin.
Yeah. That's because you have no faith. And when it is Kithkin, then what are you going to say?
No. No. I'm
That's
not
what
even
he's
answering that question.
He's going to say no.
Going to say no.
It's like playing Taste of Blood. He's just going to say no.
He's just going to refuse to believe that set entire... No, Innistrad hasn't come out yet. What are you talking about?
I think my bet's going to be on spiders for a while, at least, you know, until it comes out. I think that's the creepiest sounding creature... But you could
We're close, but I don't think it's going to be spiders either. I'm looking at this list and I'm trying to figure out what we're missing. That's the puzzle here. It's a classic horror genre, archetypal, like trope carrying something, and it's like it's staring us in the face, the answer to this puzzle, and we're going to kick ourselves when Myro reveals it in like a week or three. So
I feel like it can't be humans. I don't know. I mean, it could be humans, obviously, but like we already have ghosts, which are like sort of dead humans. We have zombies, undead humans, vampires, also undead humans. Like, it could be, but that just seems like it's too good.
It's too, like, yeah.
All right, fine. It's going to be Canadians. There, are you happy?
Oh,
okay,
God.
Okay.
I thought that was red, white.
Funny.
Aww.
Derp, derp.
Okay. But, yeah, moving along, though, like, okay. So, you guys saw the art. What do you guys think of the art for Liliana? For Liliana of the Veil?
So we're losing clothes, right? Like that's a goal. Just how much clothes can we take off that make her more powerful?
might
it's working.
I like the way she looks. I'm already a big fan of Steve Argyle and his work with like detailed characters, and Liliana looks amazing.
I mean, like I love Argyle the bits because. He not only just draws super well, he also has humor. I mean, we all saw the Chandratini.
Mm-hmm.
We saw you know, Planeswalking for Retards thing that Jace was reading. And like where Chandra's Phoenix comes from type thing.
Mm-hmm.
I really love the art. And when I was looking at the card, I was like, why don't they just print the second one? And then they said, yeah, it would look really grainy if you really like shrink it down into card form. I'm like, okay, that would make sense. I'm honestly, I love this art so much. I'm honestly thinking of like getting a print of it. You know, it's really good.
Put that up
yeah,
in your
really
bedroom
good.
Or something.
Put that in my bedroom. Yeah. Girlfriend looks up. What is that?
Don't worry, baby. Don't worry.
It's tonight, just don't worry about it, Liliana. I love you so
much. Don't worry, baby, don't worry. It's nothing.
Oh, my goodness. And going across from that, so Wizards announced Dark Ascension, and Soren apparently has a larger role in it now. You know, he's got the art and everything. Now, do you guys have any, like, speculation about what Soren might be doing on that plane with Liliana?
We haven't
killing
even been
lots
playing.
Of people.
Yeah. He is a resident badass.
Soren's pretty freaking sweet, and I'd like to see him and Liliana square off to like duel out who's the best black planeswalker.
Oh, that'd be badass.
That'd be pretty cool. I don't think we're going to get there. Soren, I just took the big look at the artwork for Soren's Vengeance.
The article.
Yeah, on the article that was posted on Daily MPG, his sword is drinking the blood. It's not just like blood trickling down his sword. His sword is drinking the blood from this dude he's stabbing. So, like, Soren just got way cooler. That aside, I don't know that we can do any speculating because we haven't even been to Innistrad yet. We don't know the storyline. We don't know if it's Ravnica or if it's its own place. Like, we don't know jack about what's actually going on. So any speculation is going to be really, really
out there
without any kind of credibility at this point.
Actually, I believe in one of the articles, I forgot who wrote it. I think it may have been Morrow. He said that Innistrad is its own plane.
Oh, okay. He did
so,
say that?
So I believe so. Again, I got to double-check my sources, but I do vaguely remember... very strongly remember that Innistrad, at the very least, is its own place.
I think more than anything, that assures that we're not going to be able to have a lot of speculation on it, at least until we visit the new plane.
I'm excited about it. I'm excited about Innistrad and everything. How about you guys? Do you guys think it'll be awesome?
I'm very excited.
I'm not particularly excited. It looks kind of like we've just stepped into another Tim Burton movie.
Oh, God.
Uh-oh.
I mean, I don't know. I could be completely proven wrong. And I really hope I am. You know, I sincerely hope this. But in the era of Tim Burton and steampunk everywhere, it's just kind of like unexciting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love that kind of art. I really do. I love dark art. You know, we had this discussion before when we were talking about art for some of the more recent sets. But I don't know. It depends. It depends about how dark we're getting. You know, just which direction are we taking this? Because... yeah, at some point we're just appealing to the steampunk people and to the Tim Burton fans, and then I just feel like we've kind of lost it.
And sold ourselves. You were saying something, Zach?
Oh, I'm very excited for this set. They got, you know, Flashback is a great mechanic.
Oh yeah, it's pretty much all but confirmed now.
I have a love-hate relationship with graveyard mechanics, because as very cool they are and flavorful that they are and exciting. Dredge is probably my least favorite mechanic in all of Magic. So,
I still don't understand Dredge.
Right, that's why I don't like it, is because it's so hard to understand what's going on or interact with it. Having been said, I know that they're going to do a lot. You know, Wizards is generally very good at balancing an environment, and they know not to do things like blood, like, you know, Dredge or Storm or things like that again.
Maybe Unearth. Maybe Unearth might be a cool thing.
No, it's way, way too soon for them to bring back Unearth. They're like, we got a recurring mechanic. They do like one of those a set now. I think that's a good call. I like the way design and development have been, you know, I like what they got going on. I think they're doing a great job. I am confident that I'm going to love Innistrad. Black is one of my favorite colors, and I love like between new Phyrexia and this like new horror themed set, how like every color just got blacker, and it makes me delighted.
Oh, yes.
Well, see, another thing about that is, you know, Sephiroth set, like my favorite set was from like the Invasion Apocalypse, that whole thing with Dominaria and when heroes were heroes, you know, that type of thing. I mean, I really liked Rise of the Eldrazi for that reason, too. You know, we saw real good old-fashioned fantasy heroes versus a set bad guy. And then at some point, though, you got to start being careful because you start blurring that line, and now that there's no real set bad guys, I'm not feeling the fantasy anymore. We're leaving that high fantasy realm and going to, well, Cthulhu, I guess. Call it Cthulhu realm.
Maybe that's our creature type is Cthulhu.
Green one. Sure. There you go.
A goop.
It's just like, oh, it's a horror. Oh, I'm done. Actually, horror. Oh, no, that's horror. Still green black. Eh.
I'm oddly enough, like, I really normally don't like black at all. Those are the cards that tend to leave my trade binder the first or before anything else.
I thought you were a racist, but
Yeah. Well, there's that too. But despite the fact that I'm not a fan of black, like, I'm still really excited for the set because it's kind of cool for me to see sort of like ghosts or zombies or whatever, or I guess zombies are black, but vampires and werewolves and stuff and whatever the green-white thing is. It's exciting to see a different kind of like enemy creature and something other than black. So, I don't know. I'm excited for Innistrad both because Liliana and Thorin are my favorite planeswalkers of all time, and just because, like, I tend to like gothic theme stuff, even though I'm not a big fan of black. So I'm excited just for a new set, because I haven't been back into Magic for very long, and anything new is really exciting for me.
Yeah. So, yeah, the general consensus is that we're all pretty excited about Innistrad. That's going to be fun. You know, I'm loving the new art, you know, this art direction that we're heading into. Wizards is doing a great, great job at teasing us and keeping us, you know, on our toes, just waiting for this set to come out. And I'm sure it's going to be a hit when it does. All right, guys, thank you. Thank you for sticking around, and thank you for talking with me today, guys. Really, I really appreciate it.
No, we knew you weren't doing anything, so, you know.
My last predictions for the fifth tribe, and I'm going to say maybe trolls, but I also think gargoyles. If it weren't for the flying, gargoyles could sell me, but I think we might see trolls.
Oh, trolls. That might be interesting.
That's a good one.
They're not. They don't have the urban feel, though. I don't know. But it is green, though, so who knows? You know, it's. I'm looking through the master creature type list on Gather just to see what even seems viable. And, you know, it's not going to be Lurgoyf, so I can tell you that much. But
it's going to be Homerids. It's going to be pretty awesome. Let me tell you. It's.
I feel like trolls are primarily green.
Are they not normally? Yeah, there's some bleeding going on with the tribes. This puzzle is going to drive me nuts until we figure out who it is. But trolls, maybe witches. I don't know. Witches aren't.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Sure.
That's more of a class.
But aren't witches human?
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
What up? Uh-oh. Or they could be Kithkin witches.
Yeah, well, you know, they just printed a lord for humans. It's that adaptive automaton, man.
That is true. I mean, humans would be a good choice. I mean, especially
a lord for everybody.
That's just, I like humans. Okay, not really, but in some cases, all right, there are certain humans that I find acceptable. So.
All right, and with that, this is Thirst for Knowledge. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Take care. This has been Thirst for Knowledge, a Magic the Gathering podcast. Thirst for Knowledge is released under the Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 Unported License.